Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community and start feeling the love and support today. Hello, everybody. You are listening to the VBAC Link, and I am with my friend Annie today sharing her stories. And Annie is one of our military mamas. This is the final episode of the week of the military episodes. So even though it's a little bit after Veterans Day, that's okay. We're celebrating our military mamas today. So welcome to the show, Annie.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here this week.
Me too. And I also can't believe that you are here right now. We were just chatting before the podcast about time. You guys, it is 4:50 in the morning, like a.m. where she's at. I just couldn't even believe it. You're in Japan.
Yeah, we live in Okinawa. Yep. So got to do stuff at weird times if I want to stay in touch with anybody in the States.
In the U.S.
It's the military thing.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So she is in Japan and she is a mom of two young girls. And like she said, living in Okinawa, Japan, where her husband is stationed with the Marine Corps. Her personal values are community, joy, purpose, and creativity, which all drive how she spends her time. In addition to her work as a nonprofit grant writer, she also volunteers with the Military Birth Resource Network and hosts their podcast, Military Birth Talk. So mamas, if you're a military mom, and I'm sure a lot of people are flocking to this episode these weeks, go listen to Military Birth Talk. And can you tell us a little bit more about Military Birth Talk?
Yeah. So it's a part, as you said, it's a part of the nonprofit Military Birth Resource Network and Postpartum Coalition. So MBRNPC for short. And that's an organization that provides resources for military families who are in the perinatal stage of life. So if you've just moved to a new duty station and you're like, oh, I need a doula that's covered by TRICARE, you can go to their website and reach out to one of their chapter leaders. So they provide that kind of resource. And then also there's sort of an advocacy wing of the organization that works on policy changes impacting military families. So this is our podcast, Military Birth Talk. Right now, we're featuring mostly just military birth stories, but we're in our third season. And this season, we're going to be adding some additional episodes like policy conversations, interviews with experts, and that kind of thing. So as you said, if you're a military affiliated person listening and you want to hear some firsthand accounts about what it's like to give birth within the military healthcare system, we'd love for you to tune in.
I love it. Thank you so much for doing that and explaining more.
Yeah.
I just cannot wait for you to share your story. So I do have a review of the week and then we'll jump right in. Today's review is by RiverW88 and it says, gives me hope. Says, as a mama who had an unnecessary cesarean and a poorly planned VBAC attempt that failed and resulted in a cesarean, listening to these stories and information gives me hope for the future. Not only do I hope that I have a third baby and a successful VBAC, but as a doula, an experienced birth photographer, I can't wait to support other women through their VBAC journeys. I look forward to sending my clients to your website and podcast. And not too far from the future, take your VBAC doula course for myself. I love the way you present facts and inform while giving mamas a platform to share positive stories about a topic that is so scary for so many people, thanks to the lack of education out there. Oh my goodness, that is so true. There is such a lack of education out there. And that is why we created the VBAC course that we did and the VBAC doula certification course. So if you are a parent looking to up your game for VBAC, or if you are looking as a doula to learn more about supporting clients that are wanting a VBAC, definitely check us out at thevbaclink.com. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, Annie, let's jump in.
All right. So I am excited to share two birth stories. So I'll focus mostly on my VBAC since that's why we're all here, but I'll give a little bit of context about my first birth. It was pretty routine, honestly. It was, I had a breech baby and there were no breech vaginal birth providers in my area at the time. So that's sort of the SparkNotes version, but to give a little bit more context. So at the time we were stationed in North Carolina, in New Bern, North Carolina. There are a few providers out there, not a ton. It's sort of remote-ish, but because my husband is in the Marine Corps, we were a little bit limited, but I actually was on TRICARE Select at the time. So that for those of you listening out there who aren't familiar with military healthcare, as a spouse, you can be on TRICARE Select, which is where you get to choose your own provider. You don't have to be seen by the military healthcare system and you pay a little bit extra. Or you can be on TRICARE Prime, which is completely free, but you have to be seen within the military network. And so I was on Select at the time, so paying a little bit extra to choose my own provider, which is kind of funny because there was really only one provider in that town anyways. So, you know, this sort of is one of the reasons why, flash forward to a few years later, I wanted to be a part of the Military Birth Talk podcast, because we often, as military families, get a lot of advice that doesn't really fit our life. And one of those pieces of advice is like, pick your own provider. Do whatever you can to pick your own provider. And sometimes that's just not possible. Yeah. And that's not just true for military families, right? It can be true for a number of reasons, but it's very true for military families. And so choosing my own provider was not really that possible given how, given where we were located. So, yeah. So that didn't really come into play until the end when I found out that our baby was breech. Generally, the pregnancy was great. It was a really empowering, positive experience for me. I loved learning about birth. I really hadn't been involved at all in the, quote, birth world until I became pregnant. And then I totally just immersed myself. And I was super excited to give birth, super excited for all of the little quirky things going into labor and my water breaking and, you know, the weird, like, seeing my mucus plug come out, like all of the birth nerd things that I had heard people talk about on all of the podcasts like this one that I had been listening to throughout my pregnancy. So it was a pretty routine, positive pregnancy. About halfway through, we found out that we would be moving to Kansas at about 6 weeks postpartum. And so this is another one of those like military things that, you know, people would say like, oh, enjoy nesting and have a really quiet, peaceful postpartum. And I was like, okay, well, that goes out the window because, you know, our house will be packed up. Right. And like our house will be packed up by the time the baby's born, because with military, you have to send stuff super early. So no nesting, no quiet postpartum period, like, you know, cross-country drive at 6 weeks postpartum. And so that was sort of my first, I would say, wake-up call around how birthing within the military community can be kind of unique. Up until then, because I was on TRICARE Select, I was like, oh, I'm not really part of this military thing when it comes to my healthcare. And that started to shift around then. And then around 36 weeks, we got a scan and found out that the baby was breech. And I was so upset. I had just spent, you know, the whole pregnancy looking forward to this experience that I now wasn't going to have. And it felt like I had been studying for a test or preparing for a final exam that now I wasn't going to get to take. And that's obviously not true at all, but that emotionally, that's how it felt. And I had gotten so excited about the possibility of seeing what my body could do it almost felt like I was like, like I had a sports car and now I was going to be forced to like drive it in automatic or something. Like it just felt like I wasn't getting a chance to experience this thing that I had gotten so excited about. So we were really upset, my husband too, because he had gotten really excited about being able to like support me in labor and all of those things. We decided not to do an ECV, which I'm sure your listeners all know what that is, partially because I wasn't really a great candidate for it. My placenta was anterior, so that sort of increased the possibility of an emergency outcome. I had kind of a high volume of amniotic fluid, so that also sort of decreases the chances of success. And the position that the baby was in, she was like completely breech. Like she wasn't, transverse or like she was totally in the wrong position. So we were like, I think it's not, we're not great candidates. Like let's not do it. So we just booked the C-section. The C-section was fine. It wasn't traumatic, but it wasn't, especially now having had my V-back and being able to compare the two, it was just kind of a, it wasn't a great day. I had surgery, anesthesia, felt nauseous all day, couldn't really hold the baby until, 9 o'clock that night. The silver lining of that, I would say, is that my husband got to spend the whole day holding the baby because I didn't really feel well. And I think that was really special for him after having, 9 months of this abstract idea of a baby, and now he got to spend that day with her. So that was actually, I look back fondly on that aspect of it. But otherwise, it was surgery. The recovery was fine. I thought it was at that point, again, like now having had the VBAC and knowing the difference, I thought it was not really that bad. It was like a week of, a few days of significant pain. And then after that, it was like not too terrible. But again, just not the birth experience that I had hoped for.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
And then after that, I was kind of like, I was not one of those people who was like immediately gung ho about having a VBAC. I think I was a little, I felt so disappointed that I didn't really want to go there again in my mind. And I was like, it might just be easier to schedule another cesarean and not worry about being the emotional disappointment. But I just didn't, that I didn't want to do that either. And so I just didn't really want to think about birth at all for a while. Yeah.
That's
And
that. That's
then,
a valid feeling and very normal.
yeah. So I took a big sort of break mentally from birthy stuff. And we did have a pregnancy in between our two daughters' births that actually ended at around 19 weeks due to trisomy 18, which is a genetic chromosomal abnormality that's incompatible with life. And so that's sort of its own whole story. But I don't like skipping over it because we
Part of your
appreciate his
story.
life and it's a part of our story, and we love our baby boy that we didn't get to spend enough time with. So after that, I got pregnant again when we moved to Okinawa. So when my first daughter was about a year old, a little bit less, we found out that we would be moving overseas to Okinawa, Japan. And so we arrived, we had the 19-week loss, and then a few months later, I got pregnant again with our second daughter, who's now almost 9 months old. And the pregnancy was so awesome for the most part. I had a little bit of anxiety around having just had the loss and feeling a little bit guarded. And I would say it took a little bit of time to actually really be able to like believe that she would be born. I think for a long time I was like, I just didn't expect it to work. And I think that kind of was compounded by my cesarean experience, that I sort of had this feeling of like maybe my body just doesn't work or something. So that sort of took a while to get over. But for the most part, the pregnancy was great. And because we live overseas, we are not required, I wasn't required to be seen on base, but the off base options are very limited here, especially in Okinawa. So a specific weird thing about the community here is that because Okinawa is such a small island, which many people don't know, it's a small island. It's not even off the coast of Japan. It's like floating in the middle of the ocean. Like it's
Really? I
closer to
did not know
Taiwan.
that.
Yes. Like if you look it up on a map, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, it's just like a dot in the ocean. And so because it's so remote, the local vibe here is basically that, like, if the American military is going to have so much presence on this tiny island, like, they really should be caring for their own people, right? Which is reasonable. So, getting seen out in town is not as easy as it is back in the States, because many of the providers, the options are just very limited. And so the other thing is that really the only other option that Americans have out here, as far as being seen out in, quote, out in town, which just means off base, is a birth clinic, and they don't accept VBAC patients there. So really my only option if I wanted to do the VBAC was to be seen at the military hospital. So my care there, I was being seen through family medicine. You can either be seen by OB or family med. I chose family med because I wanted to just continue to be seen by my regular PCM. I thought that that continuity of care was kind of nice. And everything went really smoothly. I was sort of on the fence about the VBAC, but not really. I knew I wanted it, but again, I was sort of emotionally guarded. And so once we got, into the second trimester and I started thinking more about birth, I started doing a little bit more digging into the VBAC thing, reading the VBAC link community posts a little bit more carefully. And actually, funny story, I posted something in that group. I can't even remember what the question was. Oh, it was about induction, actually, because it looked likely that we would need to, not need to, actually, that we would want to schedule an induction so that we could plan to have family fly out to be with us. We had to buy plane tickets and stuff. And so even though that was not at all what I wanted to do from a VBAC perspective, it felt like what we would need to do as far as getting care for our toddler. And so I posted in that group to try to see if people wouldn't mind sharing their positive induction VBAC stories. And two of the people who responded, they saw my picture and they were like, that's in Okinawa. We're here too. And so we met up for coffee and I'm good friends with them now.
Oh
Yeah. Yeah. So shout out to Sarah and Tatiana if you're listening. So that was really nice to be able to feel like I had a little bit of a community here in
my
that way around this very specific topic. And so I started really committing to the idea of a VBAC. But I also, when I say committing, like my goal was that I really wanted to have a joyful birth. And I really wanted to, I didn't want to suffer and I wanted it to be joyful and I wanted to feel present like I didn't have the last time. So my thinking about it was basically like, those are my priorities. And if it ends up being that having another cesarean is what will get me those things, I would rather have that than lose the joy and the feeling of being present. And, I'm not willing to suffer just to get this outcome. So those were my, that was my like list in my head. And I got a wonderful doula named Bridget, who was totally on board with my priorities. And she and I really aligned around our level of risk tolerance around VBAC, because the hospital here on Okinawa, the naval hospital, had a couple of specific things that they wanted for VBAC. They wanted me to come in basically right away, like as soon as I felt any kind of contractions or if my water broke, like they wanted me to come in right away. Whereas my preference initially was to have labored at home. And so that was one example of one of the things Bridget and I talked about around, okay, like what's our preference around how we handle this? Do we want to say, no thanks, we're gonna, labor at home for as long as we can? Or do we both feel more comfortable just getting to the space where you're going to deliver and knowing that you'll be there and they'll be, watching to make sure everything's fine? And we both shook out, or I, where I shook out on that was like, I'd actually rather just go to the hospital sooner. Like, that's actually fine with me. And so it was really nice to have somebody to talk through that with. And it was nice that we felt aligned in that way. And she's really used to working with military families. She's a military spouse herself with two young boys. And so that was really a really supportive relationship. My husband felt that way with her as well. And she's still a good friend. So that was a really important part, I think, of my preparing for the VBAC. The hospital providers were super supportive, which I was very surprised about. I didn't receive any pushback. Everybody that I saw during the course of my pregnancy was totally in support. In fact, I had a TOLAC counseling, which they require so that they can tell you all the risks and benefits and whatever. And the provider who gave me the TOLAC counseling, I think she just assumed that I was coming in blind. And so she did her whole spiel. And at the end, she was like, "So, what do you think? Like, what do you think you might decide?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, no, I'm definitely going for the VBAC." And she was like, "Oh, okay, great. Yeah, I think that's a good choice." So I was surprised by that. I think people, myself included, expect military hospitals to be very antiquated or by the book or very risk averse, which they are. But in this case, it was really nice to see that they had caught on to the fact that in many cases, a VBAC is not actually more.
Risky.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was really nice to feel like I wasn't going to need to be going in with any kind of armor on. So fast forward to the birth. So as I mentioned, I had, quote, wanted to schedule an induction for logistical reasons. And the way that the hospital here works, because they're chronically understaffed, as many military hospitals are, if you're having an elective induction, so if it's not medically necessary, they give you a date and then you call the morning of that date and they tell you what time to come in based on the staffing ratios. So our family, who we had called to come for the birth, that we scheduled this whole thing around, they arrived, and the next morning we called. It was our scheduled induction day, and I will say, the only family that could come was my sister-in-law and brother-in-law, so my husband's sister and her husband, and she's a surgeon back in New York, and so she only had like a 6-day period that they could come. So that was part of the reason why we wanted to schedule an induction. So they got here the next morning. We called the hospital and they said, "Oh, we're too busy right now. We can't safely bring you in. So call back at 4." So we called back at 4 and they were like, "We're still too busy. We're really sorry, but you have to come call back tomorrow morning." And my doula had warned me that this was very common. She was like, "Expect maybe 12 to 24 hours." But I was just like, in this manifesting headspace of like everything is going to go great. And so I was super disappointed. We went to sleep. We were like, "Oh, we were supposed to be at the hospital tonight." So we woke up in the morning, called the hospital, and again, they said, "We're still too
No.
busy." So the
Oh.
third time, "We can't safely bring you in. So you have to call back at 4." So I took a long walk by the ocean. We got lunch, we just killed time, took my toddler to the playground. I'm like, "Okay, this is it." So we call back at 4 p.m. that day, and they were like, "I'm so sorry, we're still too busy." So it's the fourth time. And
No.
by this time, there was actually a day between when our family arrived and when we started calling. By this time, we were like, there was no way they were still going to be here during. If we had to go for the induction, have what was inevitably going to be a long induction because I never labored with my first, spend the 24 to 48 hours at the hospital and then come back, like there was no way our family was still going to be here. So I was so stressed. So they're like, "We know we've pushed you now 4 times. So why don't you call back tonight at 8 or something? And we think we're going to get a discharge between now and then. Call back at 8 and we'll see if you can come in at 10 and we can start the induction." And I was like, "You know what? Like, our schedule is already messed up at this point. It sounds like it's kind of a crazy situation over there at the hospital. I don't really want to go into that mess, and I don't really want to start an induction at 10 o'clock at night. Like,
No.
so I was like, can we just come in tomorrow first thing, like 5 in the morning? And by this point, it was going to be a Saturday. So we were supposed to go in on a Thursday, got pushed all day Thursday, all day Friday. So I said, can we come in first thing Saturday morning? And the charge nurse who I was talking to said, yes, that's fine. So we go to bed, we wake up in the morning, so happy finally that like today is the day. So we say goodbye to our toddler. We get to the hospital at like 5:30 and it's super quiet. Nobody's there. And we bring the bags up, we unpack. I had like affirmations that I had printed out and Christmas lights and music and essential oils and all those things. And we start unloading the bag. And the nurse comes in and gets me hooked up to monitors to do an on stress test. And so we do that. I'm sitting there on the monitors for like half an hour. And then she comes in, she says the NST looks good, and she starts getting an IV ready because one of their protocols is that they want VBAC patients to have two
An IV.
IVs, actually.
Kate, what is the deal with the two IV thing? I keep
Dude.
hearing this. I apparently need to dig really far into it. Why two IVs?
They said one was for hydration, or what's the word for,
Okay.
yeah, what,
Hydration, like IV,
yeah, right, yeah.
LRs.
Yeah. And the other is for medication. So if they need to do a quick, hang a quick bag of something, whatever, like Pitocin, or I don't even know. It's so silly though, because like I didn't have anything when I eventually did get the IVs, I didn't have anything in either one. And the second one was really hard to get in. They spent like an hour and a half trying to get it in. And I didn't even have anything in the first one. So I'm like, why can't we just, like, nothing's in the first one. If you need to give
Yeah.
me meds, like, then whatever.
Stop the hydration, put the meds in. Or they
Right,
usually have that
right.
extra port that they can put in. Anyway, that's interesting.
Yeah, it
Okay.
was, yeah. So she goes to start to put the IV in, and a nurse comes in and goes, wait, don't put that IV in. And I'm like, why? And they're like, we don't know. The provider wants to talk to you. So the provider comes back in and she's like, I'm so sorry, but we didn't realize that you were a VBAC. We weren't tracking that. You got pushed and we won't induce you on a weekend because we only have
Oh,
one OB and we want to
stop.
have two. So we had to go home and they were like, you have to go home and you can't come back until Monday. And so I just burst into tears. And this poor OB, she was like, you can totally yell at me. Like, I'm like, how? Whatever. So it was so ridiculous. So we go home. We're like, all right, like now we don't know what we're going to do for childcare. Thank goodness my sister lives in San Francisco and her husband had had a work trip that week that got canceled. So she was like, I can actually just fly out and be there for you. And she has two kids. So that's why she wasn't going to come before. But now her husband was going to be home. So she hopped on a plane like right when that happened. So we go home and we're like, okay, we'll be coming in on Monday. Go to bed that night, Saturday. And I woke up at 2 a.m. with contractions in labor, which was just, I could cry now thinking about it. It was the beginning of a day that was the culmination of everything I had wanted from a birth experience for the last 3.5 years. And I had been having a little bit of prodromal labor that week, but it was like, it would be like one contraction at 2 a.m. and then nothing else. And so I woke up at 2 a.m. My husband was sleeping on the couch by this point in pregnancy because I had one of those massive pillows that he was like, I don't fit. I'm gonna
I
sleep on the
can't
couch.
compete with
So
the pillow.
exactly. I was like, I'm sorry, but I choose the pillow. So he was on the couch and I woke up at 2 and I was like, okay, I'm having a contraction. And then 15 minutes later, I had another one, and I was like, okay, that's two, but 15 minutes apart, like that's a long time. And then 15 minutes later, on the dot, another one. And every 15 minutes for that next 2 hours between 2 and 4 a.m. And so I was just laying in bed. My dogs were there, and I was just like, really just enjoying it, honestly, just feeling sort of emotional. And nothing was super uncomfortable yet, so it was just period cramps, that kind of a feeling. But I was like, okay, our in-laws were supposed to take our in-laws to the airport that day because that was the day that they were leaving. So I'm like, okay, I know how this works. I've heard a bajillion birth stories. I'll wake up at 6, the house will get busy, the contractions will peter out. I'll have the whole day to do whatever, and then they'll probably pick back up tonight after I put my toddler to bed. So in my head, I'm like, that's the day. That's what's going to happen. So I'm like, I'll drive our. The plan was I was going to drive my in-laws to the airport that morning because my husband was going to pick my sister up late Sunday night. And so that way we could split the trips. I didn't want to do the late night run. So 6 o'clock in the morning rolls around. I go wake up my husband and I'm like, hey, so I've been having contractions for 2 hours, but like, no big deal. I'll take Megan and Paul to the airport, which is like an hour away. And, I'll be back later. And he was like, what are you talking about? You're not going to take them. Nobody's going to the airport an hour away if you're having contractions. They can take a taxi, they'll be fine. And I'm like, no, they're definitely going to stop when everybody gets up. That's always what happens. And he was like, no, you're not. I don't care if nothing happens today. You're not driving an hour to the airport if you're having contractions. So I was like, oh, fine, that's silly, but whatever. So everybody wakes up and I'm still having contractions, but they're really short. They were like 30 seconds long and very tolerable. There were a couple that I was kind of like, okay, I kind of want to like get on hands and knees and hang out on my yoga ball, but for the most part, super easy. So 8 o'clock rolls around. We call a taxi for my in-laws, and we actually had a babysitter lined up for that day anyways. I can't remember why, but we decided just to keep her basically and have a sort of easier day. So the babysitter arrived at 8 or 8:30, and my husband went out right as she arrived. My husband went with my toddler to go do something quickly. So I was alone with Brittany, our nanny, and I had this one contraction and I was like, I don't want to talk to her. Like, I have to make, we had just met her at that point. So she was new to us. And so I was like, small talk feels really hard right now. Like, I can't make small talk. And I was like, that's kind of interesting. And
Yeah,
so,
that's a sign.
yeah, but it wasn't in my head. I was like, this is going to be a 48-hour experience because that's just what happens. Like, that was just in my head. And again, I didn't labor at all with my first. So in my head, I was like, this is a first-time birth. Like, my body has not done this before. So once our toddler was with the babysitter, I went upstairs and I got back in bed with my dogs, and I was just sort of having contractions, snuggling with my dogs, just trying to stay present. And my husband came in and hung out with me for a little while. And he said, if you're still feeling good, like I'm just going to run over to the commissary, the grocery store on base, and grab some essentials because we didn't think we'd be here this weekend and now we're out of milk and eggs and whatever. So I'll go grab some things and I'll be back in like an hour. And I was like, great, no problem. So he left around 9. And at 9:45, I was like, I can't do this alone anymore. Like, I feel crazy saying that because it's way too fast to be saying that. But I texted him and I was like, I think I need you to come back. So he came back. He brought me some fruit salad because I hadn't eaten anything yet that morning, which I could barely get down. And I was in labor for sure. But in my head, I still was like, this is going to be such a long experience. There's like nothing is progressing yet. So I got in the shower. That sort of spaced things out for a little, maybe like one, I had like one long gap between contractions. And then right after that, they started just increasing more. They were getting closer together and they were more like 7 minutes apart and then 6 minutes apart. And I was kind of having to like moan through them a little bit. So we called Bridget, our doula, to be like, hey, what should we do? And I was able to talk to her no problem in between contractions, and I was fully present and lucid. So I was like, okay, this means I'm not in active labor because I'm totally present. I can have a conversation. But then during the contractions, I would really need to put the phone down and sort of moan.
Okay, I was gonna say, but that was in between contractions,
But
right?
like in my head, again,
You just weren't in there.
I was so emotionally guarded around, like, I don't want to expect that this is gonna, I want to expect the worst. So she was like, okay, yeah, they're 6 minutes apart. I would really recommend that you wait until it's been at least 1 or 2 hours that the contractions have been that close together before you consider going in. But if you want to call the hospital and ask them what their preference is, you can do that. And I was just starting to feel really anxious about laboring in the car. And I also just had this feeling of like, I just want to be there. Like, I just want to be where we're going to be and feel settled, which surprised me. I really thought that I would want to stay at home for a long time. But it was like the feeling of like when you have an afternoon flight, like, you don't want to hang out at home before your flight. You just want to like get to the airport. And like, that was how I felt. So I was surprised by that feeling. But we called the hospital, we told them what was happening, and they actually did say, yeah, why don't you just come on in? So we told Bridget. And I was a little nervous. I was like, ooh, I bet she's going to think that this is a misstep. Like, we're going in so early. But I just was like, that's what I want to do. And so we got in the car, we went over to the hospital and got checked in triage. And I was a one, which, and I had never had a cervical check before ever because my last baby was breech. And in this pregnancy, I hadn't been checked yet. So I was super, super tense. And the provider, the nurse was like, I can't really like get up there. And like, I can barely, your cervix is really high and hard. Like, it can't really get a good feel, but like, you're definitely like a one or a two. And so I was like, okay, not great. So she left and was gone for a while to, I guess, to talk to the provider. And then when she came back in, my water broke and there was some meconium in the water. So I was like, okay. All of these things are not great. Like, I'm at a one, I'm a VBAC, my water is broken, and there's meconium. Like, all of these things are going to make the providers feel urgency around getting this thing going. But I was like, ugh, like, I definitely don't want to get an epidural if I'm only at a one, because that's a terrible idea. But I also really don't want to get Pitocin if I don't have an epidural. And I was really hoping that I could have a natural birth without any medication. But I also, again, like going back to my list of priorities, I was like, I want the joy. I want to be
Joyful.
present. I don't want to suffer. If I can check all of those boxes and also experience an unmedicated birth, then that would be amazing. But I'm not willing to sacrifice any of those things. And so after my water broke, they brought me into the delivery room and I just started laboring. They came in maybe a half an hour later and said, we probably want to start some Pitocin. And I was like, let me wait on that. Like, just give me a minute to think about things, which we can always do, right? Like, ask for more time if nothing is an emergency. And thank goodness I did that, because in the half an hour that I was, quote, thinking about it, there was an emergent, well, not thank goodness that there was an emergency, but there was an emergency, and the only OB that was there that day got called away to do emergency surgery. So he became unavailable for the next several hours. So the Pitocin was off the table for the time being. And so I just got to labor on my own. Bridget arrived and she had me get into a whole bunch of funky positions. The baby was posterior, which I knew because I was feeling this all in my back. And so she was having me get into all these really uncomfortable asynchronous positions with my legs in all kinds of weird places, super uncomfortable. But I knew that, you know, that was effective. And so kept laboring. As I said, they had trouble getting the second IV in. That took a really long time, even though there was nothing in the first one that they had put in. I guess I also had two monitors on me. They were Bluetooth monitors, so one for me and one for the baby. I don't remember that at all, but my doula said that they were like messing with them the whole time because they kept moving. I don't remember that. I think I was just more in labor land than I realized, but had the two monitors. They finally got that second IV and the anesthesiologist came to do it. And after he did the IV, he gave me the whole epidural spiel, which they have to do for legal reasons, which I wasn't paying any attention to because I was just like moaning and groaning and ignoring him. And so he left and kept laboring. And then around, so we got checked into our room. We got to triage at noon and then we got checked into our room at like one. And around like 3:30, they came back in and asked about the Pitocin. And I was like, I need to get more information about this because I need to figure out what I'm going to do vis-a-vis pain management if we're doing Pitocin. So Bridget was like, well, why don't you just get checked again and see where you are? And I was a seven. So either I made a ton of progress in that 2 hours, or I wasn't really a one when I got there, and they just I my body was stressed and it kind of like clamped up, or the provider couldn't really get a good read, whatever it was. In my head, I went from a
Massive
one to a
change.
seven. Yes. And I was so, I think I giggled. I was just so happy. So they were like, okay, well, we don't need to do any augmentation. You know, you're progressing just fine. And so I was like, okay, like, you know, we're doing this. We're just going to keep going. So Bridget recommended, I hadn't peed in a while. So she recommended that I go to the bathroom. So went over to the toilet, emptied my bladder, and then had a huge contraction and felt super. I just like needed to get off the toilet immediately. So hopped off and went back to the bed. A little bit of time passed. And then I started like feeling like I had to throw up, but it wasn't like nausea throw up. It was like my abdomen was like heaving, like a kind of thing. And I was like, am I pushing right now? Like, what? I can't, like, this is this involuntary feeling. And I knew about the fetal ejection reflex, but in my head, I thought that that was a more sustained bearing down feeling. And this was a more grunty thing. But everybody heard what I was doing. And the nurse, who was phenomenal, her name is Cassie. She was just like such a godsend. She checked and she was like, yep, you have no cervix left. You're good to go. And this was at like five. So
2 hours
got to the
later.
hospital. Yeah, just like I couldn't believe it. And I still thought that it was going to be hours and hours and hours because I was so guarded, but it wasn't. There was about 15 minutes between when she checked me and when I really started pushing. So labor down a little bit, and the providers lost the baby's heartbeat at one point, which is super common, like when they're in the birth canal. But because this provider was, he knew I was a VBAC and he had experienced some things before and was very, you know, very risk averse. So he wanted to do an internal fetal monitor. And I was like, you know what? Not ideal. Don't love it, but that's fine. And again, to like maintain the sort of like calm environment in the room, I didn't want people to start freaking out. And I was like, that's fine. Just do what you need to do. So they did the internal fetal monitor. And I sort of rolled over onto my hip, and I wasn't having those grunting urges anymore, but I could feel the baby sort of moving down on her own. And I felt her head sort of start to stretch me, and then she kind of sucked back in, and it started to feel scary, like, okay, there's no way out at this point. Like, I am the only one who can do this, and I'm gonna feel all of this. And gave a couple of really strong pushes. Up until then, I had sort of been breathing and pushing because that's what my pelvic floor therapist and I had talked about. And I had really practiced that. And so, but the provider, again, the nervousness about the heartbeat, even the internal monitor wasn't like picking up what they wanted to. So the nurse was like, okay, let's give this one really good push. And so gave one really good push and felt her head come out. And then shortly thereafter, her body. And my husband said, oh my gosh, she's here. You did it. And they put her right up on my chest. And it was just incredible. I mean, looking back now, I say it was incredible. In the moment, I think I was just completely shocked
Shocked.
because it was so fast and I had a ton of adrenaline. And I was like, you know, I had the labor shakes. So, like, my chin was kind of chattering. And my husband moved the baby down a little bit because he was like, you're going to knock her in the head. But it was just amazing. And I felt so empowered. Like, you know, it took me a few hours to sort of come down from feeling sort of shocked. But, you know, 3 hours later, we're in our room with the baby. And I had, you know, showered already at that point, walked myself to the maternity room where we would spend the next day. And it was just so beautiful. I look back on that day all the time in my head. I relive that day all the time in my head. I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was so incredible. And it was an experience that I will draw strength from for the rest of my life. It was
So
just
sweet.
amazing.
Oh
Yeah.
my goodness. And being pushed and pushed and pushed and having a plan and then it changing and having a plan and it changing. It was meant to work out this way.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can feel that now. And Oh, it's just amazing. And just to go to show, like, sometimes first time births, like vaginal births, don't take 40 hours. You know, they can go quick if your cervix is ready and your body is ready and your baby is ready. And I love that your doula was like, all right, let's get in these positions. And so, you know, like you talked about, you know, going from a one to a seven, like you very well could have been a one, but positional changes and getting better application to the baby or with the baby's head to the cervix can make a big difference.
And I will say, I think one of the things that also made a huge difference is I mentioned I was seeing a pelvic floor physical therapist. I had started seeing her around 20 weeks because I thought I had a P sneeze at one point, and I was like, I want to nip that in the bud right away. So I went to go see her, and we really worked a lot on relaxing my pelvic floor during how I would need to do that during labor. And I thought I was one of those people who's like, I'm relaxed. Like, I can relax my pelvic floor. That just means not clenching, but it's so much more intentional than that.
It
And
is.
practicing actually really relaxing my pelvic floor through pregnancy was so helpful because I knew what I needed to do during a contraction to not tense up at all. And I think that that really helped things progress because even with a posterior baby, usually that can take a really long time, but really fast labor. So I give my pelvic floor therapist, Sprout Physical Therapy, if anybody is looking, she
Seriously.
was wonderful.
I love that so much. And that, I love that you pointed out that you did it before pregnancy. A lot of people, me included, I didn't think of pelvic floor therapy before I had my baby. Why would I have pelvic floor therapy before I even had a vaginal birth? You know, that's just where my mind was. But it's so good. And now, personally, have seen a pelvic floor therapist. I understand so much more the value and the impact that they can make. And like you said, teaching you how to connect and truly release and relax because we might think we are, but we're not. And then they can help avoid things like really severe tearing and that as well. So
I had no
especially,
tearing. I had a first
yeah.
degree tear, like it was easy peasy.
Yes, yes. I have heard that a lot of people who do pelvic floor therapy can reduce their chances of tearing based off of what they know and how they connect to the pelvic floor. Yeah.
So
Oh
I'm
my
just super
gosh.
grateful and so grateful for resources like this. I think storytelling is such a powerful tool, and listening to all kinds of VBAC stories was really helpful, even the ones that didn't go as planned, because that's always a possibility, right? And like, I really wanted to be mentally strong against that. I didn't want to be crushed and feel like I lost my hopes and dreams. Like, I wanted to come out the other side of whatever happened with some sense of acceptance. And so hearing all the stories was so helpful. And having the community here, having my VBAC friends here in Oki was amazing.
I absolutely adore the VBAC Link community, and I love hearing when it's like, not only did I meet people just online and we're friends online, like we connected in our own community because there are women of strength all over, and you never know if you reach out there, you will probably have someone down the street. Just, I mean, there's thousands and thousands of people in there. So I highly suggest it. Go to the VBAC Link community on Facebook, answer the questions, and dive in because there's also stories being shared there daily.
Yeah, I felt so reassured. I think I got 40 responses when I asked for positive VBAC induction stories. So many responses. And I was like, okay, I can totally do this. And it made the pregnancy easier. Like, regardless of what the outcome was going to be, it alleviated the anxiety that I had about the induction. So even though it didn't end up going that way, it definitely made a positive impact on my pregnancy.
Absolutely. And I know that VBAC groups can make negative impacts on it as well. Like it did for me. I was in the wrong VBAC supportive group that I thought was supportive and it just wasn't. And that is why we created this one. And there's other amazing ones as well. But that's why we created this one because we don't handle the BS. We just do not tolerate it. We like it is a loving community and only a loving community. That is what it's for.
Yeah, and I was also in the there's like the chat feature where you can there was a chat group for people who are giving birth in the same month. So I was in the January group, and that was an amazing group of people too. I got so familiar with those names and those stories, and people were so supportive of every outcome. There were people there who got their VBACs. There were people who ended up in unplanned cesareans. There were people who at the last minute decided they wanted a cesarean, and everybody was loving and supportive, and it was just an awesome vibe.
It really is. Oh, that makes me so happy because these are exactly the goals that we had when we created these groups. Oh my goodness. Annie, thank you so much for taking the time again with us today. Congratulations on your VBAC, and I am
Thanks.
so happy for you.
Thank you so much, Megan. It was so awesome to be here. I love this podcast. Thank you for everything that you do, and thanks so much for having me on today.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, do you know what? I had one more thing I wanted to share with TRICARE, everybody. I'm a TRICARE doula. I work with TRICARE here in Utah.
Yay.
But definitely talk to your TRICARE rep, if you're out there listening, to see because some of them do offer coverage for doulas. So
Yes.
just to
Yeah.
let you know.
And they just announced a new set of regulations around that. Like literally, there's a new laws just came out around that. So there's some new details around that. But if you're on TRICARE Select, you have the option to have your doula be covered by TRICARE. Just a quick advocacy plug here. If you're on TRICARE Prime, if you're being seen at a military hospital, you cannot access that benefit, which is a huge problem because service members have to give birth at military hospitals. So service members themselves cannot access this benefit, which is a huge problem. So that's one of the things MBRNPC is trying to advocate to change coming up. So if you are listening out there and you have any access to any kind of advocacy channels, please get the word out that we need to fix that.
Yes, it does need to be fixed. And talking about the hiring the doulas, because it's select and you go outside, we do have to have referrals from that provider. We have to actually have a referral from that provider for the doula before we can start. And we cannot start before 20 weeks. So just to let you know. Yes.
Bummer.
So even though a lot of people hire doulas early on, TRICARE does not allow us to be seen until that 20-week mark. So
Yeah.
gear up, plan, know the 20 weeks. You can start seeing a doula and learn more about it. Oh my gosh. Okay. Thank you again so dang much.
Thanks, Megan.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to the vbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.